The two black men who were arrested at a Philadelphia Starbucks a week ago today are telling their side of the story. Rashawn Nelson and Dante Robinson were on ABC's Good Morning America. If you haven't heard the story, they say they were at the Starbucks waiting to meet a potential business partner about a real estate deal. Upon entering, Nelson asked to use the restroom, but was told it was for paying customers only. So they sat at a table and waited for their meeting. A barista asked if they wanted to order anything. They declined. Shortly after, they saw police officers enter, talk with the manager, approach their table, and ask them to leave. Ultimately, they were handcuffed and taken to the police station on charges of trespassing and disturbance, charges that were dropped later that night. Video of their arrest was taken by a bystander and viewed online more than 10 million times. On Saturday, Starbucks CEO Kevin Johnson apologized to the men and said the actions are not representative of the company's mission and values. Nelson was asked this morning what he wanted to see come out of this situation.
You know, this is something that has been going on for years, and everyone's blind to it, but they know what's going on, if you get what I mean. And, you know, just really taking those actions and putting them into place and, you know, help people understand that it's not just a black people thing. This is a people thing.
Our next guest says this isn't just a Philadelphia story or a Starbucks story. It's a story about the reality of everyday life for African Americans. Alex G. is president and founder of the Nehemiah Center for Urban Leadership Development and pastor of Fountain of Life Church in Madison. He hosts a weekly podcast called Black Like Me. Reverend G., welcome back to Central Time.
It's great to be back again. Sorry it's under these circumstances, but thank you for having me on again.
Yeah, you posted an 8-minute video. You called it a video rant on your website in response to this. And you started by saying you're very frustrated by this situation and what it says about what's going on in the United States. Can you talk about that?
I sure can. You know, I guess whenever we get to a moment where I think maybe we can breathe and maybe things will get to some sense of normalcy, then something will make national news and national attention like this. I think what was so appalling to me is that it's not the exception becoming more and more of the rule. And I just think the idea of, first of all, so when you think about what black men are dealing with at the hands of police officers, not every police officer, but certainly the cases that are highly profiled, to call the police and to have black men in Starbucks, which is really known as white space, white people's space, to have them embarrassed, handcuffed, and taken out and arrested was just over the top. And I was embarrassed for the men. I was hurt for the men. And just felt that that was a sucker punch to the entire nation and to our attempt to be more reconciled racially.
And in that rant you talked about not that long ago, you were in a coffee shop. You're going to wait for a meeting. You were going through this mental calculus about what you should do.
Yeah, I mean, and this happened before the incident in Philly. But it's a reminder that part of what makes me as an African-American male so tired at times at these situations is that there's the additional mental calisthenics. Should I be here? Am I dressed appropriately? Is someone following me around? I've got to think about having my business card on my, you know, on my person, just the extra thought of things. I got bumped up to first class. I'm in New York today. I'm actually interviewing potential podcast guests. And I got bumped up because of points. And the flight attendant looked at me and she said, I went to the bathroom, tried to go. She said, should you really be here? And I think she saw this incredulous look in my eyes and she realized that I was sitting in first class and she said, oh, and she let me use the bathroom. But she was so accustomed to black people not sitting in first class. She actually asked me, should you really be here? And I was thinking, being like, what? I thought maybe I misunderstood her. And so this whole sense of people's perception of where black people should and shouldn't be, what they should and shouldn't be doing, is just an extra step that adds unnecessary stress to everyday black life in America. And people have just got to understand this is reality.
If something like that happened, that questioning from the steward, the flight attendant there, happened once in your life, maybe not a big deal. But what you're saying is this is kind of like a daily steady stream of just a little bit of extra scrutiny wherever you go.
Sure, sure. Now, I have to admit, nothing like that happens. Like that egregious happens every day. But I tell you what does happen. I almost wish, this is going to sound strange, but I'll be honest and say it. I almost wish that in those situations, people would just call me a name and say what they're really thinking so we can deal with it as it is. I don't know that she's a racist. I can't prove it. But I forget every other scenario until the next one happens. So what happens to us is we'll put it away. Otherwise, it'll make you insane. And so when she said, should you really be here, I immediately remembered the last six times someone followed me around, asked me a question, asked for my identification, or pulled me over in my church parking lot. I rehearsed every incident, and I think that that's what happens with African-American people. That you're right. If it were just the first time, I would blow it off. But when it starts happening and you know the pattern, just you brace yourself, and then you have to still play by the same standards and the same rules as your white counterparts, knowing that you're carrying these things. And now I have the pressure of teaching my daughter how to identify these things and how to navigate it when it happens, so she doesn't have the mental or the psychological disadvantage of having to always deal this or explain or be on guard.
Talking to Reverend Alex G. from Madison, looking at this story in a Philadelphia Starbucks that's getting attention and daily life for African-Americans in the United States. We heard on Facebook from Brian. He says, how about buy a cup of coffee and stop loitering? So, and this is a response I've seen. Well, these people were there. They weren't paying for anything. So Starbucks was within its rights.
Well, if they were within their rights and the men, then the charges would not have been dropped. Brian might need to actually define what loitering is, because if that's the case, we all loiter, because there are white patrons of that business who said, we were sitting here, we didn't buy anything, we were waiting for friends, and the police weren't called. They said that a jogger came in, did not buy anything, went to the bathroom to relieve himself, and left. And so I really need people like that caller, rather than just responding, because this is part of the problem. Black people have enough to do in America than to make up stuff. White people have given us enough truth so that if we want to just pick at something, we can. We don't get up each day thinking, let's make up a scenario. Those men weren't loitering. Otherwise, then the police should have arrested everyone else who had not yet purchased something. We need to look at the definition of loitering. This is a meeting space. It's not a courtroom. It was not a doctor's office. It's a meetup space. It's a coffee shop.
We're talking with Alex G. He's president and founder of the Nehemiah Center for Urban Leadership Development and pastor of Fountain of Life Church in Madison. We're talking about the arrests of two black men at a Starbucks in Philadelphia, and why Reverend G. says it's an example of everyday life for African-Americans in the U.S. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What is your reaction to this incident, the company's handling of it, the response to it? If you are African-American, does this story resonate with you? Do you feel that extra sense of scrutiny, the idea that people see you as not belonging in certain spaces? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas at WPR.org. We'll pick up a conversation coming up on Central Time. We continue our discussion about what it's like to live while black in America. Our guest Alex G. says the kind of incident that resulted in the arrest of two black men at a Philadelphia Starbucks last week happens more often than people think. He's the president and founder of the Nehemiah Center for Urban Leadership Development and pastor of Fountain of Life Church in Madison. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Did you follow this story? What was your reaction? What do you think about the company's plans to hold racial bias training? If you're African-American, what is it like to walk in your shoes, especially here in Wisconsin, where you might really stand out in some communities? Call 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Reverend G, let's talk about Starbucks saying, hey, we're going to close our stores for, I think it's a half a day coming up, and have a racial bias training. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, you know what? Let me just say something for just a moment, if I may. If I don't say this, I'm not going to sleep well tonight. I'm thinking about the comment or the question that the gentleman just posed. You know, part of what happened during lynching or during slave auctions was that people, particularly white people, were silent. And they said, no, this was justified. The lynching was justified. The murder was justified. And I think part of the problem is people can't believe that someone would be treated differently because of their ethnic background or sexual orientation or gender. And so that disbelief allows this to be perpetuated. So part of what Starbucks got to do with their training and closing 8,000 stores is admirable. I have to say, I'm upset about what happened. I stopped drinking coffee, period, for several days. But closing down 8,000 stores is serious. I don't know that any international, multinational organization has done that. So kudos. But I think they've got to have shrewd people helping them with the training, because there are people in their employment who don't believe that this can happen. Or I've heard comments saying, well, you know, I have friends who are baristas in Philly, and they have to call the police a lot because people were going in the bathroom and they were shooting up and they were using. I said, excuse me, those are extreme cases of individuals who may have been homeless who were doing drugs. These men were professionals. They weren't doing drugs, and they were waiting for their third member to come. Then they would order coffee. Let's stop comparing someone with mental health issues who might be homeless and addicted to heroin to someone who is black and trying to do a real estate deal. You know, people keep trying to make the comparisons. So I think the big work of Starbucks company is not how to treat black people when they come in the door. It's asking staff, why do we think certain things about certain people? Where do those implicit biases come from? And that's where Starbucks has got to start. That's a great start on that afternoon in May, but that's the beginning of a lot of work, because we are not as ready as a nation as we think we are to believe that that can't happen to black people in this country.
Let's bring on a caller now. Michelle is with us in Madison. Michelle, hi.
Hi.
What do you want to tell us about, Michelle?
So I'm a seventh grade teacher in Cross Plains, and my students and I just finished our speaking about Reconstruction, which was following the Civil War, and we talk about how during that time people, you know, talked about African Americans regaining their rights and getting full citizenship, and the kids come to the realization that really, that they really didn't. And then yesterday we had a lesson, which is, you know, so similar to what you're talking about, where we spoke about biases and it's discrimination, and I brought up many cases of the things that you're talking about today. And at the end of the lesson, the kids all brought up different things, and I showed them articles and different news stories about how bias happens in so many ways, you know, with African Americans, with people, you know, transgender, with gays and lesbians, you know, due to religious biases, and just how, you know, we all need to know, and we all need to have that awareness that this was something that happened 150 years ago, but truly it does exist, and that kids need to be educated and keep their eyes open and be the first ones to speak out against this if they see it happening.
Michelle, thanks for the call. Alex talking there about bias today and in history.
Sure. The question I continue to ask my non-black colleagues and allies is, when did we push the reset button and just say we don't feel this way about certain people groups? We just assumed that because we changed legislation, we changed hearts, and we didn't. And don't forget, even when slavery ended, hearts didn't. It's why Reconstruction only lasted 10 or 15 years. It's why we saw the onset of Jim Crow, because the law said it was illegal to enslave people, but we found other ways to treat people and denigrate people. So we do have to do that, but we have to ask the question why, because it's benefiting someone. It's helping someone. It's not just being spiteful and mean. There are systems, and there's commerce and economies that are built around the mistreatment of folks. So we have to understand how ugly this whole animal is if we're really going to dismantle it. And that's why I really hope that the leaders of Starbucks will use not only national leaders, but regional and local leaders who know their local communities, who can really come in and help them with their staff, because they have made a bold move, but I don't think they have the wherewithal to really walk their staff through it. And I think that they should really benefit from champions in their own local communities. That would be a great symbol of hope and partnership to help them bring their staff into the reality that this is still here, and addressing it is the first major step to eradicating it.
Thanks for that call. We'll go next to Brett in Houstonsford. Brett, hi.
How you doing, bud?
What do you think?
Well, I got two different stories for you. Years back, when my kids were little, we went to a big box store to buy a hot water heater. And I mean, all three of my friends, I'm white, my buddies are white. We walk into the store and we look kind of shabby or whatever, but, you know, we were buying a hot water heater. But my one friend was big with the fire department and had a scanner. He locked into their security system. They followed us all around the store.
Brett, thanks for sharing that story. He's saying as a white person, he was followed in a store. Alex, but it sounds like you're saying as an African-American, that might not be once or twice in your life. It might be once or twice a day.
No, and first of all, he is infuriated because he knows that probably by the way he was dressed or how he looked, people made certain assumptions about him. He has every right to be upset. And I don't like to compare scars, but what I would say is I live in a big box store. I wish that it only happened when I went to Circuit City or Best Buy. But what happens when I go into a store, apply for a job, go to see a doctor? I've shown up with my white assistant, and people have extended a hand to him and say, you must be Dr. G. Because the assumption is I must be the special assistant or the driver, because there's no way I could be Dr. G. I've gone to places, business establishments, where they have valet services, and I was walking in for a meeting, and a woman walked out and handed me her car keys because she assumed I was a valet. I was walking in. I had a suit on. I was invited as a special guest, but the assumption is she walked out, she didn't ask me my name, and there were men with coveralls, baseball caps, and name tags. She gave me her car keys, put them in my hand, and told me what kind of car she drove. I was not in a box store. That's living black in America.
Talking to Reverend Alex G. about living black in America. We'll take a Facebook comment here from Nate. Nate writes, I'm a 78-year-old African-American in Madison. When I go into any business, the thought that I'm being watched because I'm black turns on. Do I feel relaxed? Never. Outright bigotry is subtle here, he writes. African-Americans can feel it. I would think this is true for Native Americans and Latino Americans as well. What do you think?
I think it's very true. And just because it's subtle does not mean its impact is subtle. You shoot someone with a gun or a silencer, I mean full grain or a silencer, it still hurts the same. And so black folks are not asked to be pitied. We're just trying to say we know that this is a reality and we still compete with our white counterparts for jobs, promotions, loans, et cetera. But I'm glad that interviewers like you and others are at least bringing it to light. Because, again, we're not asking for pity. We just want people to know that's not isolated in Philly, and it's not just Starbucks. It's what so many of us feel. When we go to a conference, can we all sit together? Will it look like we're not, you know? There's so many extra steps. It's the mental calisthenics. It's why I actually created my podcast, Black Like Me, because I want people just to see how I chronicle my life and for non-blacks just to listen in. It's not a gripe session. It's the good and the bad, but just being enlightened into the extra steps we have to take as African-Americans in order to just be average in America.
Let's bring on another caller now. Andy is with us in Kaukauna. Andy, hi.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. What did you want to bring up, Andy?
Well, I heard the guest, the Reverend there, earlier talking about a double standard, but also making blanket statements about white people. Additionally, in the media and over the last year or two, I've noticed there's a lot of blanket statements about white people or white males. Personally, I think too progressive a society. I think that it needs to be recognized that racism is everywhere, bias is everywhere, and I believe everyone has that within them to some extent, and I think work needs to be done to again, move past that or to progress as a society.
Andy, thanks for the call. Reverend G, he says, painting white people with too broad a brush.
You know, I hear his point. So he's feeling some particular way about hearing that in the last 2 or 3 years. Well, imagine America's blanket statements and feeling about black people the last 400 years. He's having difficulties dealing with the last 2 weeks. Imagine doing it for the last almost what's half of a millennium. We all have implicit biases. But black people don't own enough Starbucks to arrest white people who threaten them. And that's the difference. We're not saying that black people don't have that we lack prejudicial views. That's not what we're saying. But Starbucks is created as white space. Places that are clearly designated as black space are rarely frequented by whites. But when you have space that is like Starbucks that's known as a place that where just white America gathers, we're just saying what happens to black people when they're there. Now, when these incidents happen, they happen by black people. It's not Latino people doing it to us. They don't own that Starbucks. It's not Asian folks. Asian American folks are doing that in those situations. So I never say all white people, but when I say white people feel or think have said to me, that's because in my experience as a 54-year-old black man in America, this is what I've experienced by white people. But I'm not saying all white people, but all the people that have done it to me have been white.
That's all the time we have. Reverend G, thanks a lot for joining us again today.
Sure. Thank you so much.
Alex G is the president and founder of the Nehemiah Center for Urban Leadership Development and pastor of Fountain of Life Church in Madison. He also hosts a weekly podcast. It's called Black Like Me. We talked with him about the arrest of two black men at a Philadelphia Starbucks, which will also be the focus of his next podcast. You can still share your thoughts over on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Let us know your thoughts and maybe your experiences. Coming up tomorrow on Central Time, the owners of Boston Store, Yonkers, and other department stores are trying to sell off their assets, the latest in a long line of bad news for established retail stores. We'll look at the impact that's going to have on jobs and consumers here in Wisconsin, and we'll ask you if you've changed the way you shop, if online shopping has taken over for you, if you go to different kinds of stores than you used to go to. Also tomorrow, we'll meet the Wisconsin musicians behind a unique musical tribute to legendary conservationist John Muir. Hear more about his connection with us here in Wisconsin, too. And on this week's edition of Food Friday, we're turning up the heat after a week filled with lots and lots of snow. Lori Skelton gives us a hot sauce for just about every occasion. That and more coming up tomorrow here on Central Time.